And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Welcome to Critical Hit, a major spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. It is time to get into some heavy action. Mailbag action.
All right.
Your questions, our answers. Here's one from Scott who says, "Hey guys, I love the podcast. You make a fellow Kansan proud." Oh, Scott's from Kansas.
Cool.
Well, maybe. I haven't played.
Hey.
We know just, a Scott or
just
two.
Just like Brian, Rob, and me. And Adriana.
Woo! Especially Adriana.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I've played D&D since the 80s, so I'm not familiar with the mechanics of the games anymore. I was listening to episode 206. Orm's spells were missing consistently. I'm sure some of it's due to unlucky rolls, but I did piece together that his bonus was 13 compared to Torque, who seems to have a 17 to 20 bonus. It seems unbalanced. My question is this. Is this intended within the rules of his character or equipment not being optimized? I know that Randus is the usual die-rolling punching bag, but on my account, Orm is the one who has the hardest time with attack rolls. Keep up the great job. Best regards, Scott.
I would point out that most of Orm's spells, if not all, do target non-armor class defenses.
Right. So the game has this thing built into it, which is that usually weapon attacks target armor class, and usually non-weapon attacks will target either fortitude, reflex, or will. Usually those defenses are lower, and usually attacks that target them are lower. And the reason why, mechanically the reason for that is that weapons have a proficiency bonus. So as long as you're using a weapon that you're proficient with, it's going to be higher. Mm-hmm. And also with AC, you can actually wear even mundane armor, which is going to boost your AC, which is not true of the other defenses. You can only have an enhancement bonus.
Okay. Adam says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to Critical Hit for a few weeks now, and I've been wondering what you all think of the changes made to 4E. I know you probably get this question asked a lot, but I've only been playing D&D for a month. I've read the 4E core rule books and glanced at the 3.5 PHB. It doesn't seem that dissimilar. 4E just seems slimmer, fewer numbers, and fewer skills. A lot of people swear by 3.5, but is 4E really that bad? Your podcast is proof that it can still be amazing."
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, just recently, I saw this thing, I want to say on Google Plus, of like people are still being like,
"Oh, yeah.
So, which do you guys think is better? 3.5 or 3rd edition or any other version of 3rd edition or 4th edition?" And people are still going at this debate.
There's a reason why Pathfinder is so huge.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, basically it comes down to what you want. And we have answered this question a lot. Is do you want a toolkit or do you want a plug-and-play game? And 4th edition is plug-and-play. 3rd edition is a toolkit. And that's what it comes down to. And people who tell you that one or the other isn't conducive to role-playing, they are right in the sense that 3rd edition isn't conducive to role-playing, and neither is 4th edition, because D&D is not conducive to role-playing. The role-playing that we do is because the crew that is here likes it and is good at it, and I push very hard for it, but the system itself almost actively fights role-playing.
Check out Fate Core.
Yeah.
Great free system.
Yep.
It's very conductive to role-playing.
As somebody who has played, I've played nearly every version. I don't know
that I spent an extensive amount of time in 3.5, because 3.5 is an abomination. And I hated every single moment of both of the 3.5 games that I played. And part of that was the Dungeon Master being a jackwagon, but part of that was the fact that 3.5 never seemed to know what it was. It was neither fish nor fowl. I will say this about 4th edition. I don't like playing edition wars, and I don't like going, well, you gave me the inferior. I'll occasionally poke at people and say, you know, AD&D was awesome. But what I'm really saying is I really appreciated and liked the games that I played in AD&D. There is, at this point, no game in any AD&D, D&D, Frasm D, even to go back to the point where we're, you know, playing with Mud Die out of a little box, where I have had any more fun than Critical Hit. So take of that what you will. You know, this is probably my longest lasting and most entertaining game ever in 4th edition. So it's not necessarily what number you're playing, what mechanics you're playing. It's what the hell you're doing with it.
Cool. He wraps up with D&D Next coming out. Which are the books that I ought to buy on a limited budget? Should I buy all the 4E books or wait for Next? Should I screw Next and 4E both and buy all the 3.5 books? Should I stop worrying and just play whatever I like?
I think
the last one.
Find out what's being played near you, and
that is true. I mean, sometimes here's the thing: if you're willing to run the game, you're much more able to pick whatever you want, and then invite people over. And if they don't want to play, they can not play. But if you want to get in on a game as a player, you do have to sniff around to see what people are playing around you and start playing that.
I say right now, well, maybe not by the time this goes out, but there is the open play test for D&D Next. Check it out. See if you like that rule system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could probably still get the documents around even if it's, the play test isn't still going.
Right.
So, you know, try it out. Look at the other things. Just decide what system you like if there's, you know, if you're not trying to get into another group and make your own.
Jay says, technical question for Steven. Is there a reason you're not using M4A audio files? The only reason I ask is because M4A allows you to embed stills in the files, blah, 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 so they appear on the screen. If it's because you're too lazy, that's acceptable, since the only reason I'd like you to switch is that I can be lazy and not have to find the images on the website. Well, first of all, M4A files, yes, I'm all aware of what they do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason why we don't do M4A files is because they are not compatible with all devices, yeah. Right? People listen on their computer. They don't necessarily use iTunes. They listen on their MP3 player. They listen in their car. They do a lot of things. And so why make people have to convert to another file? Or, you're right, I am lazy. I'm so busy with so many things going on that I don't have time to create two separate files and do two separate edits to put this all together. So your simple answer, yes, if you want to say Steven's lazy, then Steven is lazy. But the main thing is we want as many people as possible to enjoy Critical Hit, and MP3s are probably the most widely accepted and downloaded and listened to file formats out there. Trio Crescents for everyone, since I've started listening to podcasts, blah, blah, blah. Question one, what would you have done differently in creating your character? This is for anyone or everyone.
Nothing.
Question number two, what are you glad you did in creating your character?
Well, do we have any answers for what you would have done differently?
I would say I probably would have adjusted my stats a little differently. Ket's stats are wonky at best, considering I've got 4 different focus stats right now.
I have a similar issue, too, with mine. I'm kind of going with a broad stat thing, and I could have really focused that one way or the other. And you know.
Yeah.
But, I'm happy with it.
4th edition really wants you to focus on 2 stats.
Yes.
And the game goes a lot smoother when you do, but character concepts sometimes don't want you to do that. And I mean, that's another point against 4th edition a lot of the time, especially on the roleplay aspect, is if you want to play a character who is kind of a jack of all trades, you kind of have to pick a very specific character to be a jack of all trades, which kind of works against being a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
What are you glad you did in creating your character?
Steven?
I'm... Go ahead.
I rolled the dice apparently correctly.
You didn't roll the dice.
I know, so there you go.
We did a point by.
Oh, that's right. I don't know. What are you glad you did in creating your character? I think making him snooty and snotty, I think, is probably the most interesting. For me, I guess.
What were you going to say, Matthew?
I'm glad we made Torque stupid. Because I think it's really opened up the character to do things that I wouldn't normally do. Because given my previous experiences, I have a real problem with keeping, you know, and this is going to surprise people, keeping the references out of the actual game.
What?
And while
You didn't see Rodrigo drop his water bottle.
Yeah, I know. I'm terrible about the references, but I with Torque, it's easier to keep them out of character because I have to go into the character and I have to think, okay, funnel your brain down to the point where you're thinking like Torque. So I have to actually really focus to be Torque. And I think that had I been playing a character closer to home, I think it would have been a lot more difficult to keep in character and out of character separate, especially now that it's kind of become less of an ongoing thing, and Rodrigo's giving me the face again. I think that we have gotten further away from the in-character, out-of-character problem in recent episodes. I don't think it's ever going to go away. So, you know, I'm really glad that I have that kind of that focus point. And plus, it's fun to go, what?
Question from Jessica. Multiple questions from Jessica. You guys talk about Magic the Gathering occasionally. Do any of you play regularly? Have you considered an MTG podcast? I don't know. Do any of you guys play Magic the Gathering? I have not heard of this card game that sucks time, money, and resources out of my pocket.
We do play, I think, everybody on this podcast has at some point in their life played Magic the Gathering. Rob probably played Magic the Gathering about 3 seconds ago. Have we considered a Magic the Gathering podcast? We have right now.
It is saturated.
Yes, yeah, that's the problem. First off, there are a ton of Magic the Gathering podcasts. Second, I think really in order to have a Magic the Gathering podcast, you do need a critical mass of people that are constantly playing the game, which right now we don't have. Most of us are very, very casual players. So until we can hire some freelance Magic players to do our podcast and Rob, we're probably not going to see one.
It couldn't be an actual like game podcast. I mean, that'd be pretty impossible, I think.
Yeah, it would have
to be a video podcast. I mean, it's definitely something to consider. If you are a gold member.
Yes.
For major spoilers, you are going to see some of our forays into Magic the Gathering podcast. So, good job. You guys are contributing to the cost and get to be our guinea pigs as we try out new things on you.
Mm-hmm. A different Jay says... Oh. Just
different comment. Same Jay.
No, different, not a different...
Different Jay is actually my favorite insane clown.
Yeah. I usually get a lot of these, and I'll just pass this along to people. Yes, I do get a lot of photos from those of you who go to public restrooms and take pictures of
the bathroom,
the Torque TORK dispenser.
Oh yes,
yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, I was gonna take a picture of that too, and I was like, it's not spelled correctly, it probably wouldn't be interesting. I didn't know Torque a bunch of other people did it.
Oh yeah,
I didn't do it.
I would get a lot send those pictures to Zach.
Okay. There you go. Just
Zach,
forward.
By the way, is also spelled with a Q. XAQ.
Yep.
Okay, so here's a question from Jason. I remember on an earlier episode you mentioned you had a Mac. I guess he's directed at me. And that the Insider was a SOL situation. Well, I think it doesn't matter if you're on a Mac or a PC. I'm going to be getting a MacBook Pro in September. Hey! Congratulations, you either got a MacBook Pro or upcoming September, nine months from now, you'll be getting a... this was written in July.
I wanted to know
we missed it.
If that situation has changed. I didn't really find much online about it since I'm stuck with mobile browser and Wizards isn't the most friendly with that, but even if the Insider wasn't available, my real question is, do you still have a Mac? And if so, what is available for D&Ders in the Mac App Store? Is there portals or anything, or what would be your recommendations or Rodrigo's for DMing a game from a Mac? We actually, Adriana wrote more from an app-based standpoint for your mobile device, a bunch of D&D apps that or gaming apps that people might find helpful is really kind of cool. The one thing to remember is that Insider works. I mean, you have to install Silverlight, right? Yeah, that's not a big deal. But
you have to do that with any of them.
Yeah. It's the same app on the Mac as it is the PC, and you either have access to, and Rodrigo can expand upon this, you have access to a word processor, Google Drive, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about what apps I use to run my game, I basically use Google Docs and Stickies. That's basically what I use to run my game.
What does Roll20 use?
Roll20 you can use through G+.
Okay.
Now, I've only ever played in games that use Roll20. I haven't actually been a game master in one of those games, so I don't know what tools are available for game masters.
A crap ton, apparently.
Oh.
And there's, you know, you have access to their scripting software, so
right.
You can do whatever.
Roll20 is actually pretty spiffy. I've been playing a couple games on there the last few weeks.
Have you guys checked out this new, I don't know if it's a new app, but it's that 3D dice map dice. Oh. It's this like a 3D map that you can actually, as a DM, Rodrigo can go in and place all the little characters on the map, draw out the map, and then we get a 3D representation that you can move around the map from all sides. It's really kind of cool. It's, to me, a little kludgy in how to move things and set things up.
Yeah.
It would almost seem better to do it in real time as opposed to everyone sitting in front of their laptop or their computer, but it's kind of cool if people want to check that out. I don't remember the exact name, but do a 3D map.
Yeah.
In my article, if you go and find it, it's I suggest looking at the Goathead software apps that they have available that are available on iPad, Android, PC, and Apple OS. So they're very comprehensive apps. There's ones for players, and then there's ones for if you're DMing, and they really help you organize your stuff. And there's one for DMing if you're doing a Pathfinder game. So check those out, Goathead Software, their suite of apps.
Yep, you can find Adriana's article over at majorspoilers.com. Just do a search for Dungeons & Dragons app, and you'll be able to find it. Sebastian writes in, "We recently started a new campaign, and I created what I now consider to be my masterpiece." Masterpiece character for it, a hilariously flamboyant, powerful, and fun-to-play 3.5 sorcerer. Now the problem comes in the role-playing. After a few sessions and really getting into the story, my character has been stealing the spotlight and dictating almost every action of the party, and I've only been able to roleplay off of one of the other party members, the one we made a small backstory with. What's your advice on, with a relatively inexperienced DM, getting or encouraging shy players to roleplay?
All right, here's my advice. Take what we're about to say, like, put it in your little iPod, then hand the headphones to your Dungeon Master.
Hello, Dungeon Master.
Hello, that guy's Dungeon Master. Here's the deal. You need to make sure that all the players are involved. And if your players are inexperienced or shy and you have one guy who is not shy, you are going to just naturally gravitate towards giving him the largest amount of plot and allowing him to make the most decisions. So what you have to do is A, make sure that you know the background of the other characters. And B, make sure that you know their motivations and therefore try to put things in front of them that they will want to go after. Now, chances are, if you're an inexperienced Dungeon Master, you never really sat down to figure out what your player's motivations are or your character's motivations are. Fortunately, it's never too late. Have a session in which you sit each of them down separately without the other players around and say, okay, what does your character want to accomplish? Chances are, they'll come up with cool things that you can then incorporate into your plot, one. Or two, chances are they will say something that is completely terrible and objectionable to your plot. And you can say, oh, thank God we figured this out. Don't do that. Let's get you a completely different character. Because sometimes that's going to happen. If you don't ask your players what is going on with the characters beforehand, you can sometimes get some annoying surprises and some right down terrible surprises.
Why'd you look at me when you were saying that?
Steven, we walked through every every bit of making Aurum.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know.
Why won't you let me play a vampire dragon?
Yeah, werewolf.
Why not?
You just won't give me what I want.
Yeah, that's
stifling me.
Yeah.
Dragonborn with the vampire heritage and the werewolf theme.
Yep.
I want to play a 35th level mage assassin with power and breath and fire and everything.
Power breath?
Yeah, power breath.
Power breath. Power breath.
We only have 30 levels to play with, though.
Yeah, that's now.
Daniel or Danielle writes in and says, question the first, stealth. That's a thing. Do you mind going over stealth and concealment mechanics?
Sure. Go to www.majorspoilers.com. Go to the Critical Hit archive and find my house rules on stealth. You can read those. Now there's also a Critical Hit house rules archive as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you click on all of the house rule articles, have a little thing at the bottom that says Critical Hit house rules archive. And on there, there's going to be my rules for blast and bursts, stealth. I'm working on the rules for flying. I haven't I have it, but I haven't articleified it. To the point where I'm like, yes, to the point where I'm comfortable putting it online.
Question the second, Game Master's Workshop. Any intention on revisiting that? Be interesting to see how another go at being the GDDM for Steven would pan out, or maybe even Adriana, Rob, or Brian want to take up the reins. I leave out Matthew, not because him running a game would be undesirable, but because he already said once that he wouldn't DM from afar. What are you looking at me for, Rodrigo?
Well...
I wouldn't mind it. I think I'd rather get through our awesome story that you're telling us first.
We'll talk about it at the end of the season.
And then...
If we ever get there.
Maybe our season think will about...
Never. Well, at least one of you is going to get to the end of the season.
Or not.
Is there a season anymore? I mean, Spud took over. It's all one place.
There's every season, certainly.
Nice.
That's the problem. There's one season.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
One extra long, non-ending season.
It's called Doom.
Doom. Doom. Nick writes in.
Doom.
Nick writes in and says, I have to say the podcast is way entertaining. 6 exclamation points. And maybe 7. My eyes are not that good tonight. I find myself both as a player and a person so much like Torque that it's scary lol. I greatly appreciate the work you guys put into the podcast and am only on episode 52-ish and working hard to catch up. Is there an official Twitter, Instagram, Facebook for the podcast? Thanks, as Nick. So you want to go to majorspoilers.com. That's the official website. You can hashtag Critical Hit. That's about the most official that you're going to get as far as Twitter goes.
And I would say the majority...
Hashtag keep it cryptic.
You can do that as well.
The majority of hashtag Critical Hit posts do tend to...
be Pokemon.
They tend to be us.
Yeah, usually us, but occasionally you'll get some Pokemon.
Yeah, you'll get Pokemon and other role-playing games and stuff like that.
So that would be, I guess, if you want to follow, Twitter-wise. Otherwise, each of us has our own Twitter account. I'm at Major Spoilers. D&D Brian is at D&D Brian. Rob is at Boromortal. Rodrigo is at Fearsome Critter. Matthew is at Mighty King Cobra. And Adriana is at Miss Very Very, M-I-S-S Very Very. So that'd be the best way to follow us. Instagram, I mean, I don't know if all of us have Instagram, but there's not an official Critical Hit. I'll usually post something through Instagram or through our Major Spoilers Facebook page.
I think if you start following our Twitters, you will soon find your way to the weird tangle that is our social media.
Yeah.
You'll probably end up in our Tumblrs and Facebooks and...
Definitely end up in Tumblr.
At least it's not Face Critical Tumblr. Miss Very Very.
Yeah.
Face.
Matt says, I'm not a rules lawyer. I don't even play. I just wish I did to get my fix of listening to you guys on the show. So this is not a criticism, just a comment. Prone means lying on your stomach. Lying on your back is supine. I'm not sure it doesn't really matter. I just wanted to clarify so you could either A, describe prone accurately, or B, start using supine. Is that how you say it?
Supine
to describe a character on his or her back. Sorry, but this was drilled into me long ago during my first year of medical school. and I think it's part of Hippocratic Oath, and I must correct errant podcasts. However entertaining they are, thanks, Matt.
What's this person's name?
Matt.
Thanks, Dr. Matt.
Thank you, Dr. Matt, and thank
Matt
you for being
here. Matt is my favorite person. Prone. Oh, my God. Well, Matt is the best.
Here's the issue. Prone is a rules term.
Yes.
So no matter what, if a character is on their belly or their back.
Or their side.
Or I suppose their face.
Yes.
They are technically prone as per the rules.
Well, if they're on their face, they are literally prone.
Just like...
As Matt just taught us.
Just like... No, I meant like just standing. Yeah, like their legs their are straight up and just their face is on the ground. they're just like, for example, when one character moves their speed over to fight a monster, that is walking.
Yes.
The character is walking, which doesn't make it sound like the character is like running over like they should be, because there's a rules term called running. Just like there is a rule term called
armor class penalties. Yep. So we don't want to mechanically run, even though flavor-wise be running.
So, yes.
I think that's the worst named mechanic.
Run? Yeah, it should be saunter and hustle, is I think what it should be.
if you're moving at a half speed, you're run.
Right.
If you're moving to the left, you're DMC.
Chris writes in with a question. Hello, Critical Hit Crew.
Hello,
Chris. I was wondering if you could help me out with a couple of questions I have. Are there enemies in the game that require multiple turns to charge up their attack to use it?
Yes, sort of. There are... basically, monsters don't have daily attacks. They have ad wills and they have encounters, and some of their encounter attacks can be recharged.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfectly reasonable to essentially fight starts, monster uses its Omega Sanction on you,
mm-hmm.
And then it has to, every turn that it doesn't recharge, you can make the little Mega Buster sound for it as it charges up again before it sends Batman back in time, I guess. I'm sorry. That reference got away from me.
Yeah.
But yes, any time that the monster doesn't roll, you can attribute it to be charging.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's a number of monsters that have two attack combo attacks, where basically their first attack either knocks a target prone or dazes it, puts some sort of effect on him, and the second attack is either a crap ton more effective against a target that has what the first effect is, or can only target something that has
some like vampire type monsters can only use their crazy vampire bite attack on targets that are grabbed, but of course their at will attack is a grabby attack.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of stuff like that, or you know, things that mark you and then do extra damage, as well as also like some powers like do different things whether you save against them or not. Like if they put something on you that a save ends and you don't save against it, sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes if you do save against it, like there's a secondary effect. Thing. So, although there's no, as far as I know, no direct charge-up mechanic, there's a lot of stuff available in the game that you can flavor that way.
Mm-hmm. Chris goes on to say, also, is there such an enemy that can become stronger when one of the comrades dies in battle? For example, say Orm goes down in combat and Torque goes R and gets a +1 to whatever. Thank you for answering these questions. I think what he's saying is there such a thing as the quickening in Dungeons & Dragons? right? I'm guessing, but I think he says enemy, but then he uses Orm and Torque, and Orm and Torque are the bestest of friends.
Right. One of two questions.
Yes.
Either he's asking if there's monsters that get better if they kill one of the player characters.
Right.
So or there's monsters that get better when one of their allies dies.
So
both
first
of
one?
Those are yes.
Okay, cool.
Right.
Any that come to mind?
No.
Okay.
I want to say There
actually might be some undead ones for the second.
There are definitely some critters that when they die, they give like temporary hit points to other ones.
Yeah.
So, but it's not like this guy gets better when his friends die. It's just like if you have a whole squadron of those guys, every time one dies, it beefs up the other ones. Look for monsters that have the leader tag. Those guys will usually have either an ongoing effect that pumps up their friends or will have some sort of power that benefits from people being adjacent to their allies or within a few squares of their allies or even give their allies extra actions, which is huge.
Yeah.
John says, hi, all. Really enjoying critical hits. You all rock. Question about artificers in 4E. In 3.5, artificers can craft constructs, and I have seen builds based around having a small army of constructs to do your fighting. Listening to the latest Critical Hit podcast, it seems that artificers don't work that way. Can artificers in 4E craft constructs, or are they just summoned for a battle as a power?
They're just summoned for a battle as a power. Yeah. You can make all your dailies constructs, and then... And a couple
and
encounters.
Chemical items that...
Right, that act as that as well.
Yeah.
But yes, in 4th edition, that is not the case. In 4th edition, and in 3rd edition, you used to be very much able to transform your XP and money into, like, direct battle power.
Yeah.
Which is, like... And I don't mean by leveling up. I mean literally taking your excess XP and turning it into, like, a robot to fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the case in 4th edition.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? No. Okay. Tom says, hi, I've been listening since the start of season 4, and I love the show. Nice. I hope Critical Hit is around until the end of time. Well,
we'll see when the end of time is.
Yes. Anyway, I have a question about dungeon mastering.
The end of time was 3 seasons ago. Now we're up to like the 12th Doctor.
In the mailbag on episode 210, you said that basing a D&D campaign on a book was a bad idea. My question is it possible to base a D&D campaign on a book without railroading the players? The book I'm looking to base it on is Dragonlance Chronicles, which is actually a D&D book.
Yes.
In a sense, yes.
There's two parts to this. Are you basing it on the story within the book?
Because
if so, then that's going to make it really difficult to railroad the characters. It's basically putting them on...
But if it's a D&D book, it's probably set in... Neverwinter Nights or Eberron.
It's in Dragonlance.
Forgotten Realm. Yeah,
Dragonlance is an actual
setting.
It's
Greyhawk is what it is.
Grin is the Dragonlance.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Greyhawk's a different thing.
If you're setting it in the world, especially if you're setting it in Dragonlance actually has D&D
campaign, worlds.
Campaign stuff that you can go and pull. But if you're setting it into the world, I usually say you could do it in the world, but... Don't put it on a specific story point.
Right.
Or if you are the specific time frame, the characters can change whatever the crap they feel like because they're the ones who are in charge of the story.
A lot of the time, the best way that works is, for example, saying things like, the boy who lived actually didn't. Mm-hmm. Vader actually managed to track down the twins.
And you have evil Luke and Leia to fight.
Yep. And now this is the game. Like, you are basically... What works a lot of the time is doing kind of an alternate timeline. Because then the players are still familiar with a lot of the concepts. Yeah. And then it actually helps if the players are familiar with those things. Mm-hmm. And then you can change a few things. Just tell your players ahead of time. They're like, okay, well, you know, I don't know. Skeletor still has a face. That's important.
Hey, man.
And furthermore, Optimus Prime died, and so did Rodimus Prime, and now you are the only Transformers left.
Save Wikipedia. Save the world.
You can always base your stories on existing media, but they're the biggest problem with it is the fact that probably most of the time your players will catch on to that.
Yeah.
And secondarily, your players should have the ability to alter the story. So if your story is, you know, the Dragonlance and the thing in the face and the Glaven, you can't assume that your characters, you know, even if you have somebody who is basically, I don't know, Sturm Pyre, you cannot treat that character as though you're a writer writing the story of Sturm Pyre.
Right.
Mostly because that character, you know, is doomed to die horribly and nobly.
And maybe your player character doesn't want to die.
And you know, aside from that, a lot of the times stories have these powerful people that aren't getting involved or aren't getting involved in the plot for one reason or another. When you are running a role-playing game, that can be a problem. Of course, there are literally settings of D&D that have that problem, that just have very powerful NPCs, and it makes it difficult for the players to... Yeah, to affect any change.
Hey, look, there's Elminster again.
Yes. Yep. Josh writes in.
You sure hate him.
Blackstaff. Josh writes in and says, "You have helped me understand so much about D&D, but I've recently listened to an episode of Critical Hit where you were discussing having murders and rapists in D&D, and this brought up an issue The guys I play with are 15 to 16 years old, as I am, and I feel disturbed by some of the things they say they want to RP. They keep saying that due to my character Rogar, a dragonborn fighter, they say they wish to put Rogar in a zoo, which irritates me a bit, but they say that I'm RPing a wimp due to not wanting to rape and pillage and have lots of sex with different women due to his background and being honorable race, and it winds me up a bit. What do you suggest I do to RP properly to try to change their thoughts about raping and all the other nasty things?
Call you have the some cops.
I know, this that's
is,
one thing.
I'll tell you
I don't
that.
Understand. This is, this I don't is, understand this rape culture in games. I really don't understand. It really is bothersome to me.
This is not an RP. This is not a role-playing issue.
Yeah, this is a social
this is
issue.
This is a social issue. So
this is an ass clown issue.
What you tell them is, I am not comfortable with this.
Yeah.
Like, if you guys want to keep doing this, then I'm not playing with you. And then if they keep doing it, you stop playing with them.
Yes.
There are groups out there that are running games that are not in any way based on rape. So you can just go find one of those, and you'll probably be happier.
I honestly, the more and more that I follow female creators on Twitter and other people on Twitter, it's just this thing of this rapey culture in games that just bothers me more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. And Adriana, can you talk some more about this? I mean, you've had people throw comments your way, right? That are pretty derogatory and not appropriate.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, for some reason, women in gaming, like, there are certain, like, default, like, insults that people give each other. And I'm sure, like, homophobic epithets are, like, the usual go-to between dudes.
Right,
And when there's women, for some reason, it escalates really quickly to violence and rape and just really strong... very strong language and insinuations that, you know, guys don't tend to receive, unfortunately.
Right.
I mean,
is that because even at 15, 16 years old, there's so many people that are just not mature enough to, and I'm not saying that these guys are immature, but it just seems that.
Well, I would say that.
I would go on the record as saying that. And more importantly.
No, but they're also British, so. You know,
here's the thing, though.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I know.
Being a part of those games is not necessarily healthy, because I will guarantee you that there's at least one other person in that group who feels the same way that you do, who is troubled by the references, troubled by the violence, troubled by the unpleasant, you know, sociopolitical overtones, however you want to look at it. But the problem is, when you're 15 and 16, you want to belong, you want to fit in, and the other guys are saying this. And I think that your move here is to tell them, either this stops or I go. And
right.
You really do need to go, because if you let people expose you to things like that, all you are really doing is harming yourself. I don't think that any of them... Well, let's put it this way. I've been in games like that. I've been in games like that with people who are old enough to should have known better, or perhaps I should have different verbiage in that sentence, but people who should have known better having games like that in their 20s.
Well, I just actually went to, like, a Magic draft like a couple weekends ago, and it was like a really not great experience because a lot of the guys, a lot of them who are like my age, like some of them, one of them, especially the worst one, was married with a baby, and I had to sit through like a lot of rape jokes. And as soon as like the jerkiest one got me alone, just said the most inappropriate things to me the entire time. And I'm an adult, you know, and he's an adult and not 16. Age means literally nothing to on this subject.
Honestly, I have a hard time grasping this because maybe Matthew and I grew up in a different time and culture where that is not how you talk to people regardless of their sex, but to just, you know, throw out a comment like, I hope you get raped, is like totally beyond my comprehension because it's not something that I would ever say to people.
Also, you guys didn't grow up with the internet.
Well, that's true,
too. I mean, the anonymity that the internet brings as far as that stuff is huge. But I would just say congratulations, 15-year-old
Josh.
Yeah. For having the sense to realize that your friends are doing something stupid, you don't have to be in a situation, especially if you're playing a game, you don't have to be in a situation you don't like. Even if the game was about like picking fruit off of trees and you felt that picking fruit off of trees was wrong and they called you a wimp, you don't have to play that game. You don't have to do anything that you don't want to do. And especially in a game where you're supposed to be an awesome dragon, you definitely don't have to do any of that
stuff. Yeah, and don't try to like your reasoning doesn't have to be, well, my dragon is a lawful good dragon. No. Like, just being uncomfortable on the basis of, I'm trying so hard.
Just
not
tell
to
them.
Hurt.
I mean, be honest with them and say, this is stuff that's not appropriate. This is not how people act. And I don't want to hang around you guys if this is the way you're going to play the game. And just throw it down like that and tell them to grow up.
Ugh. Well, and it's a question of dehumanization.
Yeah.
I have walked into situations and I played a game with six guys, and the word that they used, and I'll give them credit, they told me specifically, the reason we do this is so that we're not calling things gay. And I'm like, okay, good. Good step forward. Thank you for realizing that using that as a pejorative is bad. The word they used instead was, that's Jewish.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. And the first effing time that happened, I literally stopped the room dead, and I used my big boy voice, and I said, absolutely not. And the entire three-hour game session, the rest of that session, was a discussion of what had just happened. And why that's not going to happen again. And to their credit, it did not happen again. But it's just a question of, you can't, even in this game, there are points where we're like, we're going to kill all these rotten goblins. That's fantasy. When you take a real person or real people or a real group of people and you dehumanize them as either your villain or your victim or your target.
Yeah, people actually get raped in real life. People are actually like rapists, and also I think it's like one out of every 100 actually rapists actually serve time in jail. Mm-hmm. It's, if you ever look up a rape statistic, it's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not like goblins are getting killed every day.
Right.
Or anything. It's like, no, this is actually a real thing that happens.
Yeah.
And is an actual problem that affects the lives of, if you know, like four women, one of them's been sexually assaulted. Think about that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm
it's a thing.
I don't know. I'm just appalled by that. That's why that's why I don't have Xbox, that. Xbox Live, any of that stuff where you go online and have to listen to people.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad this person actually, like Rodrigo said, like,
good
congratulations for
you, Josh,
not being a gross human being and actually recognizing that this is not cool.
Yeah.
You're better than the adults that I played with.
And if your friends continue being douches, if they continue doing this, you have no compunction to continue playing the game with them. You have no compunction to continue being friends with them. I mean, that's another story entirely, but you don't have to be a part of that game. Even if it's the only game you have access to, even if it is the only way that you're going to get to play D&D with other people, it is not worth it to stay in a game that is going to be offensive to you. I think we've all been in situations where, oh, I can't find a game, or the only game I can find is, you know, not quite perfect. But if it gets to a point where this is happening and you're having these responses, you are better off not gaming.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
Until you find a group that isn't comprised entirely of assholes.
Well, Josh, thanks for writing that in. That's a big topic as far as people interacting and social, just being, how to interact socially with people and what's appropriate and not.
Yeah,
so thanks
don't be
for
a douchebag.
Let's get to Austin's question. He talks about how one time he created this really intense maze for his players, and he thinks that they really liked it. My question is, have any of you ever run characters through a maze, and what would be the best way to make them feel the scope of being lost? I was thinking about this the other day because...
I know this one. You play David Bowie music the entire time. You take someone's little brother, steal them,
right,
and you're going to like change them into a goblin or something. Fill it with Muppets.
And make sure that they know that their brother's going to be eaten.
At
midnight.
I think he's supposed to just become a goblin or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He wants that kid for some reason because he's
That is like my favorite.
And then the very beginning, you drive me nuts by like having your characters talk to like a little worm, and she's.
I think we're on a specific tangent.
You don't want to go like, that way. That way goes straight to the castle.
That way, it would have taken us straight to the castle. Like, kill you, little worm.
A really good technique to disorient.
That's not a good voice at all.
Okay. I'm with you. A really good technique to disorient people is actually on display very often in Critical Hit. And it's Rodrigo. It's Rodrigo sitting there for a moment, taking a moment. Trell's going doopy doopy doo, and Torque's going dorky dorky dork. And all of a sudden, Rodrigo is like, "You're there." So if your characters are, we're in the maze, we're trying to figure out what's going on. Bob's on fire. You're walking. Are we sure? Check for traps. Check for traps. The floor is gone.
So,
keep them on their toes interpersonally.
I think a good way of making people describing the feeling of being lost is if you think about times that you've been lost and you think about what exactly about it was making you feel lost. For example, sometimes we feel lost when we've gone in a circle and we end up exactly in the same place that we were before without trying to. Also, if a place looks exactly like another place, but you can't really tell if it's the same place, they just look very similar. It's like, did I actually advance or did I go in a circle? Restricting information. If a player doesn't know whether they're facing north or south or whatever, obviously they still have their stats and they might be able to figure it out and stuff. But if you start taking that information away, especially the deeper they get into the maze, so the players get into the maze or the characters get into the maze and you tell them, okay, you're heading north. Now you're heading east. Now you're heading north again. And after a few things, the interactions that happen in the maze, you're like, okay, well, you turn left here. And then the moment they ask, well, I was going north. Am I still going north? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, Rodrigo, sometimes he'll be like, I don't know. Are you like, look at that one episode in the Fields of Autumn.
Yeah.
They are in a maze.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying.
I'd say
don't turn me into a pumpkin.
Thing about it is just depending on what type of feeling are you wanting to evoke with this maze? Because, I mean, unless you're wanting to bring up tedium and frustration, you probably don't want to have them actually try to navigate it.
Right,
at an intersection. Do you go left or right or straight?
Right. And sometimes it can't, that's the problem with situations like that. Sometimes they can be frustrating to the point where the players will be like, well, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So you do have to be careful about that. I would say, honestly, the best way to do it
is to have a maze flavored set of encounters. Yes. And just emphasize, you know, if they do a skill challenge, make sure that you emphasize the lostness of it.
Yeah.
Don't let them use stuff like diplomacy necessarily. You know, like make sure that they have, that they're gearing things towards finding their way. And when they fail, or if they fail, you can gear the responses towards that feeling of being lost.
Kevin writes in, I love 4th edition. However, I really love to run my PCs old school style dungeon crawls, but with the length of with the length of time a single combat takes in 4E, it can take several sessions to get through what would be a one or two session dungeon in AD&D 3.5 or Pathfinder. Any suggestions?
Yes.
I guess, what do people consider a session? Because we've run
It depends how long they go.
Yeah.
Right, but not an entire dungeon crawl. But, I mean, some of our battles will take 2 hours.
So there's a lot of stuff going on here. One is, what do you consider the length of a session?
Right.
I mean, if we look at, like, 4 hours, I think, is probably a reasonable size session that mm-hmm. most people will do.
Yeah.
I can see it, but... I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've played some colossal fights, like just unending fights in 3rd edition as well. Yeah. What you have to do is, you can't approach 4th edition the way that you approach 3rd edition. Mm-hmm. You have to look at 4th edition, and you have to look at what speeds up fights in 4th edition. And what speeds up fights in 4th edition is... crap, I've forgotten the name of... What's the striker monster?
Lurkers?
Skirmishers. Is fights full of skirmishers, maybe lurkers, maybe artillery. Do not throw more than one brood in, and do not throw more than maybe a couple soldiers in if it's supposed to be a big, long fight. Because skirmishers and artillery do a lot of damage. They don't usually slow down your players. They're much more straightforward, and they have fewer hit points. So basically... you end up with a fight in which on both sides, like, both sides' hit points are just dropping precipitously.
Yes.
Each decision's a lot more tense. Action points are getting thrown around a lot more. If you look at the battle with the Orklings, that was all skirmishers. And that fight basically went up like a, I don't know, gasoline.
Fireball?
Yes.
Soaked thing.
Yes, gasoline-soaked
Molotov cocktail
D&D fight.
Thing.
Yes. Went up like this, metaphor went down.
Yes, pretty much.
Went up like a wasp.
went up like a crappy metaphor.
Matt writes in and says, I'm a first-time DM creating a 4E campaign. He wants to know about reskinning monsters. My question is for Rodrigo. What monsters would you suggest to reskin as corrupted natural world creatures for level 2 to 5 encounters? I plan to use Coul, C-H-U-U-L, for some corrupted eight-legged deer. Any further suggestions? I'm thinking of using poison or acid as a uniting theme.
Durgar!
Oh, interesting.
Oh, they shoot poison quills.
Yes. I thought they shot fire quills.
Poison or acid. It's not fire.
It can be corrupted porcupines.
Yes.
Bladelings.
Bladelings.
It's relatively easy to just change damage types as long as you do it uniformly. Mm-hmm. So even if you find a monster that shoots fire out of its face, you can usually just say, okay, any instance that says fire is now poison, and do it pretty okay, or necrotic damage. Off the top of my head, I can't really think of like level 5 to 6-ish monsters.
From
yes.
PHB those, one.
Yes, those pikemen that just keep knocking pikemen. Brian down. they keep knocking him supine.
Oh. Yeah.
All right. So hello from Scotland, says Dolphin. Jack.
I apologize for the accent.
My friend who is liking the game wants to be a dungeon master, but wants to run his game in AD&D 2E because he was able to pirate all the books. But in researching it, looks way too complicated with all the tables and stuff. I tried to tell him to use 4E, but since he has not got the books or willing to pay for them, he won't do it. I want to be a PC but for once, but not in an AD&D 2E game where all of us have to relearn the game again. Let's see.
Pirate the other ones.
Let's see. By the time you read this, it'll be too late, but I would like to know your opinion on this matter and what you would do.
Sounds like you've worked it out yourself. If they are running the game, then they get to pick the game they run.
Yes.
If they're running a system you don't want to play in, then you don't play the game. That has literally happened to me, where somebody comes to me and says, hey, let's play Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And I say, hey, no thanks. Because I can't have two D&D editions floating in my head. I really can't. Damn. It'll kill me.
Dear Nearly Deadman, I've been playing around with the idea of having a canine familiar for my bard in a game I will be joining soon. I was wondering if you would mind explaining how familiars work in combat in regard to their defenses, their hit points, and so on. Can you help me out? Says Kevin.
You have a book that has the familiars stuff in it. It should have a instruction summary, the page before you choose the familiar.
It's basically they have the same defenses as you.
Mm-hmm. Each additional familiar feat gives them +1 to their defenses, but they share defenses with you. They're considered a minion for HP purposes, which means they only have one hit point, and they do not take damage on a miss. What else was it?
That's about
his question. Okay.
There's a place that actually talks and explains
usually,
all this.
Yes. Usually, familiars are not in any danger of being damaged in combat unless you activate them.
Yeah.
Didn't we do that?
I don't know that we've ever... I don't know that anybody who actually has a familiar has ever activated it in combat.
Okay, but is Randus's little spider thing a familiar?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we did do something where we had, like, all the familiars were in the battle at once. And I forget, and that was, like, maybe an off-season episode or something. But somebody had a little... I thought it was your little spider, and you had a little water thing and the dog, and everybody got into the combat.
All right, so this is important. The Torque's dog that we shall never speak of again is not actually a familiar. That's actually a magical item.
Oh, okay.
A wondrous item at that.
Like, you get a familiar by picking up the arcane familiar feat.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the rangers, like if you pick the Beastmaster Ranger who comes with an animal, that is not a familiar either. And again, this is what we're talking about. This is a rules term. Familiar is a rules term, just like prone is a rules term. So, although you have your cool little wolf that helps you out, and in-game you could potentially call it your familiar, a familiar is a specific thing. Just like, for example, if Orym was to summon Mordenkainen's faithful hound, that would also not be a familiar. That would be a construct, or a summon monster spell, or whatever they're called nowadays.
Summon conjuration.
Is Camus' lizard Is Camus' lizard things? Are those familiars?
Camus' lizard is a familiar, except that it also doesn't matter because Camus is a monster. Like, any time that Camus is on the battlefield, this is not an actual actual PC character with a sheet. This is a monster.
How dare you, sir? That's my fiancé.
Hello, Critical Hit Team. You guys have probably heard about the relatively new D20 game 13th Age. Do any of you know about it? And what do you think of it?
Go, Brian, go.
I do, in fact, have the book. Haven't really sat down to read it, but it's lighter than what I'd want in a D&D-style game. Mm-hmm. It's not nearly as mechanically defined. It does some interesting things narratively, but then that's not why I play D&D-style games for.
Yeah, there's always this interesting like back and forth as like new applications of the D20 system come out.
Yeah.
Where people try to do a much more narrative version of it. And again, the D20 system really resists that.
Yes.
It's like once you get to that point, people get to the point where they're like, well, why don't we just do fate. Or Tristat or something like that? That's going to be a lot lighter already.
Yeah.
Where instead of like trying to compensate for all this extra rules baggage, we just start over with a game that's much more narrative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ben says, I wanted to ask if any of you have ever have any experiences with code dungeon mastering. The game I'm running now is the first time trying it. It's working surprisingly well. It takes commitment from the other person to be invested enough in the campaign to want to help develop it, but forsaking the chance to be a player. You guys done anything with this?
I've done a lot of stuff like that. I don't think I've ever done a campaign where it was just two people being the DM.
Yeah, check this out. I mean, one of the things that that Ben talks about is frequently we split groups of enemies or running the NPCs and running the enemies to speed the flow of the combat. So it's each of them doing those kinds of things as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, my experience with it has been, like, you know, one guy doing the story things, another guy handling the mechanic side of the stuff.
Mm-hmm. The other stuff I've seen is where you both have a PC and you kind of switch off who's running on any given session.
Right. Or everybody, or basically everybody takes turns being the dungeon master for a campaign that's a little bit more loose like that. I've never tried it. Because I couldn't. I would murder the other person.
You would.
Because of who I am.
We tried to order pizza once and he nearly killed me.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I nearly killed the pizza guy. Yeah,
hello, Critical Hit crew. I'm Josh from Illinois. Do you have any suggestions on a class that is a tanky healer suited for dwarves that can hit hard with a big sword?
Paladin. Rune Priest might actually be better. I just haven't done a lot of looking at it.
Or just the cleric.
So you have basically three options. Rune Priest, which I can't really speak to too much because that annoys me and I haven't read it.
Yeah. Ditto.
Cleric, which since there are a lot of clerics can't, or there are builds for clerics that are weapon based, they actually deal a fair amount of damage. Or paladins, which are going to basically, if you look at a cleric and you look at a paladin,
Do you want to be heavier on the fighty side or on the
exactly.
healy side?
So clerics will be heavier on the healy side. Paladins will be heavier on the fighty side. Both of them get access to fairly good armor. And the paladin, straight off the bat, gets access to the best armor in the game.
And he's the only one that gets access to it.
And he's the only one that gets that. Yep.
About, you know, the most that I've, you know, looked into, the Rune Priest, he basically seems to be a different cleric.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think a cleric that's based on strength and wisdom directly, which actually dwarves get for free.
A melee cleric,
right?
Yeah. Specifically,
right. So it's an option for you. But then again, you can just play a like wisdom strength cleric, which dwarves get anyway.
Yeah,
I thought dwarf was a class.
back in the day, it used to be. Yes,
way back when.
Joe writes in and says,
it's a class of humanoid.
I really love Rob's character, Smith.
Oh,
you poor bastard.
He just said he recently started listening, so...
Oh, you poor bastard.
Sorry.
It's going
to
be rough.
If you ever get to this episode...
Yeah,
sorry.
We apologize. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could tell me the class build he's playing, because I'm really interested in having a go at it.
Sorcerer.
He was a cosmic sorcerer?
Yep. Cosmic magic sorcerer.
Cosmic magic sorcerer, yeah.
They make great brownies.
And... the race was Shifter, if you want to know.
I haven't figured it out.
Yep.
Yeah, he might be recent enough. If you haven't figured it out by now.
Yes, by now it doesn't matter.
Yes. By now, irrelevant.
Yep.
Cody
says, I'm in the middle of your adventure and trying to take down the void in the Astral Sea. Fall in love with Glaw. I want to now create a changeling, one that sprouts things from his head to create light sources and grows tentacles during combat. From what I can tell in my research, changelings are somewhat limited in their shape-shifting ability in comparison to their doppelganger roots. Could you discuss what the limitations of a changeling's abilities are?
What the DM allows.
Basically, it's cosmetic.
It depends on your definition of their limitations, because changelings in 4th edition come with this power that allows them to change their face into anyone, which roleplay-wise is so huge that it can actually completely throw your game off its axis. In a fight, all that stuff tends to not matter, although they literally have a little encounter power where they make their face go like blah, 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 and it like freaks out their enemies. Now, you can always take other things to simulate a changeling that has essentially trained a little harder to be able to change their body a little more. The most obvious one being the druid class, which has a feature that allows you to turn into animals and stuff, and you can flavor that however you want. Aside from that, you can always take wild talents and like fey cantrip feats and stuff like that if you actually want to have mechanically relevant lights and things like that happen out of your character, and you can just flavor it as, you know, your changeling growing some like moth antenna or sprouting out some like bioluminescent tendrils or whatever you want.
Or the thing he's specifically referencing when Gla drew an anglerfish face in beast form.
Uh-huh.
And I say you can just use the glow rod or the sun rods. Is that what they actually are called? I never remember.
Yeah, you always call them glow sticks.
Because they're freaking glow sticks.
Because Ket came from a rave. That's his backstory. Like, I was like, Rob, send me the backstory for Ket, and he turned in two words, a rave.
Rave. Yeah. Gambling rave.
Yes.
Gambling rave. Rodrigo wouldn't let him wear the big stripy hat.
Yeah.
Here's one from Fisher. Wanted to let Steven know that he's has officially made me laugh so hard as I possibly can. Here's what happened. I live in Washington, a place where eating sandwiches has recently been made legal. I came home tonight after a long day of work.
We get you.
I came home today after a long day of work and was just eating a sandwich.
She's pointing at herself, huh?
I just understood what they meant. I'm like, sandwiches? We have lots of sandwiches. Like, okay.
You do now.
Yeah.
That's an old
euphemism.
Major spoilers.
Episode
that you have to go back and listen to. Mm. I came home tonight after a long day of work and was just eating a sandwich and listening to Critical Hit when suddenly Trell smeared Moonster guts all over Orym. The ensuing madness almost made me die of laughter and bronchial pain. Thank you so much for what you do. You made a listener's night. That's pretty funny.
You're welcome, Stuart, hungry boy. God. You're welcome, fellow Washingtonian.
Washingtonian.
Is that what they call him?
I think so. Washingtonian?
That's accurate.
Washingtonites.
Yes,
no, we actually specifically asked one of our English professors what it was, and she looked it up because she didn't know.
Was she from Washington?
No, but she looked it up.
We're all from George Washington.
That's right. He's the father of our country.
Especially Rodrigo.
Especially me.
The literal father of our country.
I once chopped down a really weird cactus, but I couldn't tell a lie, so I just told it in Spanish.
Yeah.
It's late.
Oh, you both, you people.
Sebastian says, all the way back in episode 11. Yeah. My God, are we reading emails from 2010?
What the heck?
It's so many of them. I'm glad so many people are getting into the show, and you're finally caught up.
It's because you keep asking all of our listeners to share with their friends.
I know, and that's great. Actually, one of these other guys.
I've gotten it. I just get this steady trickle of anger of like people being like, "Hey, Rodrigo, just started listening to Greg. My favorite character is Myth. Yay."
How could you do that? Okay, I'm gonna keep listening. Hey, Rodrigo, just had a listen. I'm still listening to Critical Hit. I wonder how this Lords of the Feywild thing's gonna go.
Oh my God, Spud! Why?
Spoiler for those of you that are just
of you that are jumping in now. Go back to episode one. Don't be weird.
Man.
You are reading the end of this manga. Go back to the other side.
Read,
you can totally
right
tell
to
them
left.
To send the Smith hate to me. I mean,
Do you guys know William Easley? You guys know him?
Sounds familiar.
He was apparently a student here at the university and was disappointed that he didn't get into a Critical Hit until after a friend of his pointed it out to her. Or a friend of his, she pointed the show out to him. Mm-hmm. Michelle is her name. So that's kind of cool. Sebastian says, we've got just a few more questions here to get through this month. All the way back in episode 11, Rodrigo and Brian were ribbing Rob for pulling off a TPK. Rodrigo's exact words were that we'd hear that story another day. Here's a friendly reminder, and for one, I'd love to hear about that adventure. P.S.
I think we've had that question before.
Rodrigo is
the bestest. That question, or someone else asked the same thing.
Yeah, I guess that's
last
true.
Mailbag episode.
Yeah. We couldn't remember. It's either Sleepy Drow or Scale Down Bullets.
Bullets were terrifying.
Either way, we've decided that Rob shouldn't scale down monsters anymore.
Or Three Man Party.
That could be it.
There was that one. I think it was you two and Bronson.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
You fought bullywugs.
Stupid bullywugs kept proning us.
The great knight NATO writes in and says, Ket rocks, but Randus is better. Now that's out of the way, I have a question suggestion for you all. I know we would all love to sit down and remote play in a D&D session with you guys, and we all understand that's not possible. Maybe you Rodrigo really could use our name or nickname as an NPC or monster you guys and gals are fighting. I know I'd love to hear my name called out as torqued as a comet fall charged in the face.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Uh-oh. Nate, you're great. You're a cool guy. We've had lots of conversations, good times, but no, I'm not doing that. I actually had somebody contact me and be like, hey, you know what would make my friend's day is if you like called out, like had an NPC who was their PC from our game and like it's my friend's birthday and it would be super great. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not putting anybody else's stuff in Critical Hit. If for nothing else, legal reasons.
There you go.
Because we are trying to get some merchandising off the ground up in here.
That is right. And some other things. Watch the skies.
But mostly our website.
And somebody's please send me that.
We just need to start projecting our website into the sky.
Oh, that's a smart idea.
Send me one of those 3D printers. Hurry.
I was born in Minnesota.
Jacob sends me an image of a sign that says, welcome to Basalt. Although he says we pronounce it Basalt, but it was awesome to hear our little town mentioned so frequently.
That's okay. We call it the Arkansas River around here.
God. That's because it is the Arkansas River.
Yes.
In Kansas, and only in Kansas.
Yes.
No, well, that is not correct. The river is named the Arkansas River. It is not pronounced the same. It is not the same thing.
I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I accept Missouri.
We also pronounce it El Dorado.
Yeah, El Dorado's a good one.
El Dorado.
El Dorado is also correct.
Lyman, Colorado. That's a good one.
See, we can't argue both sides of this argument. I mean, you know, people can call their town whatever the hell they want.
Sure, sure. I'm just saying that's how they pronounce it around here.
Or their river.
Stupid freaking river.
You're saying that's how they pronounce it in those parts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In these parts.
Throat wobbler mangrove.
What?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not Salina a weird pronunciation?
Well, most people think it's Salina. In fact, like,
wife crazy almost, every time we drive through and I go, Salina!
Well, actually, my little GPS robot calls it Salina.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yep.
Yeah. We'll go back to the...
There was some street that is just like a regular kind of like English last name. And it just, like, pronounced it so weird, and I can't remember what it was, but it was, like, something, like, really obvious.
Like Baker.
Jimmy Baker.
Yeah, something, I mean, it was something like that.
Roundabound.
Yeah, roundabound.
Oh, maybe this is already answered, and if you don't want to answer it, it's fine. My quick question is this, says, okay, there you go. Think of a number between 1 and 5. That was the question.
There you go. Good job, Matthew.
All right, listeners, I think that pretty much brings us to the end of our mailbag.
Wait, what? What? I'm afraid of that question.
Stay in character, Tork.
Oh, you want to play?
Matthew.
All right.
Matthew, what are you reviewing today?
What? Hey.
Matthew, what did you think of Birth of a Nation?
What?
What?
We were supposed to watch that? You're supposed to give me a month's notice on that.
You really do.
It takes a month to get through that movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be rough.
If you're wondering what we're talking about, it probably is in relation to many of our other podcasts that we have in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you want to hear about eating sandwiches, I think the episode is called Sandwiches, I think.
Sounds right.
It's I think it's like in the 100s episodes of the Major Spoilers Podcast somewhere. It's one of the early episodes.
Wow.
It's really worth listening to, but really you need to be 18 or older to listen to that episode.
Are you eating sandwiches while you...
No, but we talk about sandwiches quite a bit and eating sandwiches quite a bit.
We also had like a whole Altered States podcast.
Yeah, oh, that's what it's called. Altered States podcast, yeah. Yes. Yes.
This session is making me hungry.
Because it talks about eating sandwiches and also me going sleep deprived for like
hours without sleep,
more than 48. I think it was, it was a long time. It was like almost 3 days without sleep.
It's more every time you talk.
Yeah, I think it was like 127 hours without sleep.
This big.
76 days without sleep.
It was a couple of days without sleep. And it's an interesting podcast to go back and listen to.
8 years in Tibet without sleep.
3,722 hours without sleep.
Yep. You might want to go check out, we're just talking about
Zach on Film,
which is if you want to get into some film theory stuff and find out why you should be watching movies like Raging Bull and Birth of a Nation.
And Gremlins.
Awesome Gremlins.
Yeah, this is
Zach borrowed our Gremlins.
Huh?
Zach borrowed your Gremlins.
Oh, okay. That was my favorite movie before Adam's Family came around.
Nice.
And have you watched movies since 1998?
This is when I was a kid, man.
This is Brian in a nutshell just now.
don't get Brian wet.
Yep.
Don't expose him to bright light. Don't feed him after midnight.
Which sucks because my lunch hour is at 2 to 3. So.
Which explains everything.
We also have a top five.
Both Brian's attitude and the shelving at Walmart.
And if you feed him after midnight, he turns into Rob.
We do have top five if you like lists and rankings and all that kind of stuff. That's a fun show that we
do.
If you like in-depth reviews of new issues of comics, Matthew and I do a show called Dueling Review. And, of course, what if you want to be missing? Oh, Munchkin Land.
Yes.
If people like the card game Munchkin, it's a very popular show on the podcast network where we sit around and we play Munchkin and talk about Munchkin and let Rob cheat his way to winning.
Hey, if you like the deep and intense role-playing of Critical Hit, you will love Munchkin because there's none of that.
Exactly. It's occasionally.
If you're not winning.
There are occasional times where we will put a immediate interrupt rule that says that you must role-play this Dutch sailor. And it has so Zach in it. So
it's so violently terrible.
And if you don't know who Zach is, you probably should get to know the young lad. He's quite a bit of fun. All that can be found over at majorspoilers.com. You can find all those shows on iTunes. And really, we want to thank everybody who's been putting all the reviews up on iTunes for Critical Hit. It does help us out. We're doing something right now that it's really important that you do download episodes because we have some people who are inquiring about, you know, I have a such and such thingy that I would be interested. Can you tell me about your podcast and how it may be beneficial to both of us? So do those downloads. What's that?
He said such and such.
He said such and suchingly. Or you can, if you want to just get all the shows, look for the Major Spoilers Podcast Network Master Feed. It's in a long title, but that's exactly what it is. And you get some original other podcasts, too, that are part of that. Some ones that are not produced by us in that mix. Anything else?
Pay attention to majorspoilers.com for articles about Critical Hit, both the rules and the game world. Since the party has made it to Diamond Throne, you may well see some articles detailing Diamond Throne as well. So,
I would also say that if people are looking to buy the likeness of Ket on a shirt, if you're wanting to buy the Critical Hit logo, the big dice that says Critical Hit on it, you can head over to /loot.com and you can buy your favorite shirts. I say buy one of each, buy multiples of each. That way when one wears out, you've always got that one still in the wrapper that you can break out.
Yeah.
Or like what was
when one gets slightly dirty, you can just rip it off and put on a new one.
I like to think of the diehard Critical Hit fans closet, kind of like Doug's closet, right?
Yes.
Doug opens up his closet and it's just nothing but the same outfit all the way down. Nothing but
print copies of the vest, white shirt, and shorts.
Yes, exactly.
Who's Doug?
Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew knows him as Quail Man.
Quail Man, yes.
Oh, I know Quail Man.
Yes.
Why didn't you say so?
All right, listeners, thank you again so much. We have so much fun doing this show, even late at night, or maybe it's early in the morning. I don't know which.
It's both.
It's not late. It's early. Thank you so much. We enjoy doing this, and we're glad that you guys enjoy the show as much as we enjoy putting it together. And until next time, here's hoping that your dice rolls are critical hits.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.